I was a teaching fellow and graduate student at Harvard Law School decades ago, and I took a course on oil and gas law. Interestingly, it was a visiting professor of the University of Texas, William O. Huey. You may or may not know him, he's long since gone. But at any rate, in that same class was somebody called Ernest E. Smith III, who came to Texas as I did, became the dean, but he taught oil and gas. He fully understood it. I still don't understand it. Some of you don't understand it, and every now and then a client comes in with a mineral interest and a question, what the hell do we need to know? Well, we got some help today. Sean Rainey comes to us by way of Rice and then Texas Tech Law School, and for a number of years he's been with Cotton Bledsoe out in Midland. And all I know is Cotton Bledsoe has been in Midland, Texas, practicing law since time began. And so we're just delighted. Sean is going to help, especially those of us who need help on oil and gas interests. Thank you, Sean. Take over.
Thank you very much. I may be the youngest speaker, but I still work in paper, so don't worry, I've got all my notes here. Yes, sir, thank you very much, Mr. Akers. So I entitled it Time for a Workover because when I initially did the paper in the earlier presentation, it was for an intermediate course, and essentially we were trying to get some basics taken care of, and so we tried to dive a little deeper, and I thought, why in the world would I not lean hard into the pun of a workover of a well, which has been the rebirth, if you will, of the Texas oil and gas industry with horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing over the past 20 years. So from that end, this is what we have. And so we're going to start with the basics, and I know Professor has already given us a return to the basics with others, but in the end, it's important to have the historical context that was the oil and gas industry in Texas. Famously, an investor in Standard Oil once claimed that he would drink every drop of oil we ever found west of the Mississippi River. I grew up in West Texas. My great-grandfather was a roustabout. My grandfather was a roustabout. My father was a roustabout. I decided I did not want to be a roustabout, having worked as such. And so from that standpoint, and now I live in Midland, the greatest oil-producing region in the United States of America. Not Western Pennsylvania, as was at the time. Not even the first place we found it in Texas. So Spindletop, Jefferson County, January 10th, 1901, was the first gusher in the state of Texas. For 9 days, it spewed out 100 million barrels for those 9 days, okay? Cover the ground, nothing you could do to try and get it up from what you had there, and suddenly the Texas oil boom was on, and it was in the Gulf Coast where it started, and actually, you mentioned Rice. The importance to Houston, for those of you who came in from there, as to the gusher at Spindletop and that tiny little weather event that happened in Galveston the fall before made a huge difference in the trajectory of the city of Houston. And so from that standpoint, we want to talk about the facts as they sort of have developed here. Going way back to initial oil and gas 101, mineral interests are real property. And normally, I will bring with me a little acrylic barrel that has West Texas Intermediate crude inside, but I was traveling light, and I was very much afraid that I would have way too many questions with TSA leaving Austin today. Getting out of Midland would not have been a problem at all. Everyone's seen that paperweight. We all have one at least. But again, minerals are real property prior to their extraction. Now, they're subject to the ownership in place doctrine, whereby they are treated as a possessory subpart of the fee simple estate. Under the rule of capture, a landowner vested with fee simple title may go in and attempt to drill and see if they have oil and gas or other minerals on their own property.